aboard, you people. It is a Starship Rokon show with Anna DeBlanc. It's up for another day of broadcast excellence.
I'm kind of feeling for all the people who were inspired by yesterday's weather and just kind of bolted out the door this morning wearing, you know, kind of what you might have worn yesterday, maybe an extra little light layer. You're feeling it right now.
Yeah.
You're feeling it. I'm seeing some people walking by on Michigan Avenue. Like, I'm okay. I'm okay.
It's the wind.
I'm not even cold, bro.
Crazy.
I'm totally warm in my t-shirt.
I seriously saw this guy, and he was wearing a sweater vest and then khakis, but he looked miserable. Poor guy.
I'm good in my cargo shorts, man. Totally fine.
Oh, it's fine.
Well, that's the guy who comes out in March when it's, you know, right. The first 50-degree day. Or 60-degree day, but the wind is off the lake, and it's 40 degrees downtown, and he's walking around. He's going into Bottled Blonde. Is this still open? And he's got the cargo shorts
on. A liquor license.
And they're kicking him out of there.
And flip-flops.
I just want to say, yeah, and flip-flops. Exactly right. I just lost my first glove of the season.
Oh,
I'm really upset about it, too.
This is too
soon. Left or the right?
You know what? I don't even know.
Too soon.
I just had one left.
Well, what happened
put them
to the little thing that you clip on to your coat? Did that come off?
I know, Mom. I'm sorry. I thought I was going to.
I love those. I don't care.
I'm going to get one of those because I've lost a
couple. Right? They're awesome.
Why not?
Those are still a thing?
Sure.
Wow. No, not really. But I might
when
come
I was growing
up,
it was
one.
The string. You did the string that you put, you tied onto the mitten, and then it went through the back of the coat and down the other side.
What?
You didn't do that?
No. I just had a little clip. You just clipped onto the sleeve.
Yeah.
And you still lost the gloves, though.
Oh, it came
right, because it comes off. Because then you lose the clip and the glove.
Exactly.
The clip comes off your jacket. Yeah. I mean, and it was so ready for this. I think I'm going to have to immediately go and buy gloves now because it's cold as crap outside. I mean, this is a typical. I blame Skilling for this, and he's avoiding us today.
He is.
This is a typical kind of move. It was 65 and sunny yesterday, and you're like, all right, global warming, bring it on. And then the next thing you know, you're out here, and it's only 30, what is it right now? Who's got that?
Like 35.
35? And it feels like it's 20.
Well,
what the hell
wind,
is that all about?
The
wind,
does not
right?
help.
What's
the
wind chill?
Yeah, 20. What? It's exactly
all right,
20.
So there you go.
But you know what?
And I don't have a glove.
The Lake Michigan water temperature is 45 degrees. A balmy 45.
My right glove, by the way, my right hand. I mean, that's an essential hand.
Is that how you hold your Starbucks?
That's how
coffee?
I hold everything.
Yeah.
And that glove is probably in the lake right now.
Well,
carried by the winds.
What I did is I walked, and it just within the last 15 minutes, I walked down Michigan. I did my path.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You can't retrace your steps because the wind took it. Yeah.
Well, the wind might have taken it, or when I went into the building I was in. I walked, you know, and I'm going up to all the different stores that I walked into.
Too
or,
many places.
It was like
to
a
check.
Food court. So I went to the food
like,
court,
look at this guy.
And I'm
looking
like,
for a glove.
Did someone just hand you a black glove? And then I realized how incredibly creepy that sounded in the year 2017 when I asked.
And
no,
nobody,
not the
nobody's
right
going to do that. They just aren't. Not
anyone
one
see
glove.
My glove? Looking for a glove over here.
I almost did that there. In the food court.
So if you're at Nordstrom's at the food court, look around for a
rose. Oh, there's more than one now there. It's just Nordstrom.
Okay.
Oh, we're going to open that can again.
Yeah, there she goes again. Anyway, the point is that, yeah, I was up there and I'm going, like, you know, because I bought the sandwich at one place and I bought the drink at another and all that, you know, because I want all the people to get the love at the food court because I'm happy with all of them. And
that's
so
nice of you.
It was after like the third time I went to like, did somebody just hand you a black glove? I realized,
sounds so creepy.
Oh, we got to stop. We got to stop right now. Gotta stop. All right. Anyway, it's gone.
All right. Well,
maybe I'll go into
goodbye.
Nordstrom's after work.
It had a good run.
And get new gloves from Nordstrom's. Here is Violetta with the WGN traffic trouble spots from the Tribune Tower across from Nordstrom's.
No, just Nordstrom.
There's this also. Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com and check it out today.
All right, Peter Roskam is a congressman from the western northwestern suburbs. He is one of the authors of the House version of the tax reform package and has now been invited to be in the mixer. Whatever that means.
That sounds fun.
That's what the president calls it. It's a mixer. It's more fun than a conference committee.
We had those with the sororities and fraternities in college.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the same.
I don't think it is, congressman, is it? It's a different sort of mixer.
It may be an all-skate.
An all-skate. Oh, I like that. Oh, I like that, too. Hey, what? All right. So you're going to be in part of this committee. Let's just talk about the timing of all of this. House, Senate, you've got two different bills here. There's some things that are in common. Many things, really, that are of significance that are not. And now you and other members of the House and a few members of the Senate are going to sit down and try to bang out these differences. How close were you already? Because I know there was some of this work had been, the groundwork had been laid for this. And how much time will this take? And when will this final bill get cobbled together?
So I think let me answer the last question first. I think this gets on the president's desk the week before Christmas. In answer to your question about how much work there is to do, there's a lot of work to do, but there's a lot of work that's been done already. And so one of the things to think about now is the momentum of getting this done. So the House of Representatives, a majority in the House has voted yes on tax reform. A majority in the Senate has voted yes on tax reform. And now you've got, sort of momentum coming from two institutions that are telling a group of people, sort out these problems, come up with the best solutions from both of these bills, find common ground, and come back and get this done by the end of the year or by, before Christmas.
And you think that'll happen, Congressman?
I do think it will happen. And I guess part of it, and we talked about this before, but part of this is the miserable experience of the healthcare debate over the past year, which really shaped a lot of people. It was so miserable and so disappointing. A lot of folks said, I don't want to live like that. I want to come up with solutions that really work. And so the disposition of people coming together is really significant. It feels very different than the healthcare debate.
Let's just go through a couple of the major differences here and work our way toward where you think that they're going to end up or how you'd like to try to at least push them to end up. There is some debate about the corporate tax rate. There's been some math on this that you might be able to get more deficit relief by going to 22% as opposed to 20% on corporate tax relief. Where are you on that?
Right. So we passed a 20% rate that would start on the 1st of January. The Senate passed a 20% rate that is delayed a year. My preference would be to do whatever we do, but start it on the 1st of January. And if it means revisiting and going up to a higher number, let's see what we get in exchange for that. But I think the smarter move is to have the tax cut happen immediately as opposed to a delay.
The sunset on the personal side?
The sunset on the personal side is related to some of the sunsets on the business side. So there's parity there. And what I have a level.
So you're okay with sunsets?
Yeah, because a future Congress is not going to let those things sunset. And we can use that fiscal space, so-called, in order to drive more tax relief up front.
Well, a Democratic Congress would do that with a Democratic president.
I don't think so. Not on the middle income in particular. And that's where the lion's share of this tax relief is going.
Congressman, what about the repeal of the Obamacare mandate? Do you think the final bill will reflect that there will be a repeal? And do you think that that ultimately will lead to the death of Obamacare and scrapping it for something new? Is that an intended consequence, an unintended consequence?
Yeah, so I think the repeal of the individual mandate will be in the final bill and will pass the House and the Senate and get signed into law. Obamacare right now, the whole healthcare system is incredibly unstable. And so I think that this puts more pressure to come up with appropriate solutions. But in answer to your question, yeah, I'm quite confident that the repeal of the individual mandate will be included in the final bill.
How are we going to protect small businesses in the pass-through legislation here? This is a little complicated and a little weedy, but people who have small businesses, which is, as we always talk about,
yeah,
a very, very big employer, very big driver of the economy.
Huge driver of the economy and huge in my district. So there's two elements. One is the tax rate on the first $75,000, which is low, and it's a historic low, which is terrific, down to 9%. I think that stays. The question, Ro, that you're asking is, how is the internal mechanism of, quote, business income treated? And I think the Senate may have an approach that is easier than the House. This could be an example where we take up the Senate version and move away from the House version. It could be that their approach is better than ours.
Okay. All right. And there's a couple of other issues that are elliptical to tax reform, but more along the lines of things that have been asked for by special interests, as every bill in Washington is. This is not unique, and this is such a big and transformative kind of legislation. Mm-hmm. There are people trying to get things in here at the very end. Obviously, the Hillsdale College piece that got caught and then taken out last week, or appears to be on its way out. But there's a couple other that are sort of significant. The so-called Johnson Amendment, which is this is one of the things that the president promised when he was on the campaign trail last year. He promises to evangelical audiences that he was going to, at this point, churches, any kind of church, any kind of religious institution, gives up its tax-exempt status if it starts to get involved in politics, if they start to preach politics from the pulpit. That has been the rule since the 1950s in America. Question here is that this in one version of this bill takes that out. Now, do you support a repeal of the Johnson Amendment and to allow churches religious institutions to maintain their tax exempt status while getting involved in politics?
So I'll give you a straight answer. Let me give you a running start to a straight answer. Right now, that law is inequitably enforced. So in other words, you got a lot of folks. You see at the end of at the end of the year where people are going into inner city churches, for example, and these look basically like campaign rallies. I mean, they're really, really
well. That happens all over the country. It's happening in Alabama right now. I mean, that happens. But that's not being preached from the pulpit. There's a difference between the actual. The people who run the church, the pastors, the ministers, the rabbis, the imams, the priests, preaching it, and then having a guest come up and do it.
Right. And so the question is, how do you maintain the ability of a church or any other house of worship to be able to preach its doctrine without feeling like, hey, I'm getting encumbered here, and this is a teaching of our institution, and so forth. So I think the Johnson Amendment, as currently crafted, is not effectively enforced. I think it's very inefficient. And the proposal in the version of the bill that passed the House that I support says that there can be de minimis activity. It cannot become the overarching activity of the House of Worship, but you can have de minimis activity that creates it so that the Internal Revenue Service, God bless them, is not going around tracking down churches to decide who's coloring inside the lines and who's
well,
not.
Well, I mean, the other issue here then is that then does it make political organizations tax exempt? That's the end of that argument, which is declare yourself a church and you're still a political organization.
Right. And so, look, I think on all of these issues, there's a natural tension that we have in the United States in that we our first freedom is the freedom to worship. That's the first freedom in the Bill of Rights. And there's a real sensitivity to government involvement either on the subsidy side or on the enforcement side of all of these activities. Here's what we know. There's a lot of ambiguity right now about how this works. You gave the example of, you know, some churches that are probably in the news this week, mm-hmm. down in the Alabama primary, right. or in the Alabama general election. Right. I gave an example, you know, and there's the Pew Foundation did a survey that they published that said, look, 24% of people last year heard churches saying vote for Hillary Clinton. Okay, so this is part of this natural tension. So I'm of the opinion that we need to move to create some clarity and a safe harbor for churches so that they know what the ground rules are. And if we need to revisit this in the future, so be it.
Okay, very, very quickly. There's also language in the tax reform policy that recognizes for the first time, it codifies an individual in utero, which means a baby yet born, which means a fetus. Which is the beginning of an argument that a lot of conservatives would like to do to make that individuals in utero have rights, the same rights as a baby or as somebody else who's been born, right?
Yeah.
Do you support that language staying in?
Yeah, so that's similar to current language that is in the criminal statutes. So if a pregnant woman is murdered, there's a separate charge for murder of the baby who's in utero. So this is not new ground as it relates to the legal treatment of a baby in utero. The thinking is give people a running start on their ability to save while the baby is growing in the womb, and isn't it a good thing to be able to do that? I think this is one of these deals that can get completely hyped up and taken out of context, and this is a good thing to allow new parents to save more money for their kids.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Peter.
Thanks.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Congressman Peter Roskam. Congratulations on the mixer.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's in part of the mixer. Hmm. All right. Here is, well, let's see, Judy Pilak. She's standing by. She's got the WGN News in 2 minutes. All right, let's. Other stuff happening in Washington today that we need to get insight from Aaron Blake,
yes,
senior political reporter at the Washington Post, who joins us here every week or so. We appreciate your mm-hmm. time when you can give it to us, because you're very busy. You're on deadline, and I like when print guys go, "I'm on deadline. I can't do it. I'm on deadline." And you, you're very, very kind with your time.
He doesn't shout at us either like that. He just says, I'm on deadline.
Aaron All right, says. Let us ask Aaron Blake a couple of different questions here. We just had Peter Roskam on. I made a little bit of news here. He's the congressman from Illinois, who's now part of the mixer. He's going to be one of the House representatives in the conference committee that's going to decide what the tax package is going to look like. And it does look like some of the controversial things, and I know the Washington Post has done some reporting on this, some of the more controversial social issues that are not widely reported on because there's so many other things that, you know, affect the consumer and affect businesses and stuff like that, that are getting the headlines. But there's a couple things buried in tax reform here that appear not to be touchable, including the reversal of the Johnson Amendment, which keeps churches from becoming political institutions, and it keeps their tax-exempt status only if they shy away from politics, from the pulpit. They can have guests come in, but theoretically, the ministers, you know, the religious leaders of the church can't take it. The church can't officially take a position. They're gonna do away with that, where churches can actually do that. Evangelicals have been asking for that for a long time. And then the in utero language, so you get a tax deduction for a baby yet born, which gives a tax status, a citizenship status to the fetus, which conservatives have been looking for a long time. And that appears to be, you know, it's going to go through. What are people on Capitol Hill? People are dodging this question, right?
Yeah, I haven't heard a whole lot about those particular provisions in the bill. I think the main ones, when we're talking about the passage of the bill once it gets out of conference committee, is some of these things that these Republican senators had secured as part of this deal to effectively vote on it to move forward with the process. And so we're talking about Susan Collins. We're talking about Ron Johnson from your neighboring state in Wisconsin there. You know, basically secured some concessions about this process and about the bill. And the question is whether the House is going to go along with that, whether Congressman Roskam is going to go along with that and give the Senate kind of what they want. This is, I think that people underestimate, you know, they know that both houses passed a bill here. But there are significant differences between the two sides, and this didn't pass with a large majority in the Senate, of course. So there is a lot of this process that remains to play out, and those provisions you talked about are certainly part of that, and the things that Susan Collins and Ron Johnson are looking for are certainly a big part of that, too.
Other big story, in just about an hour, there's going to be background briefing from the White House to reporters about the president's decision on moving the embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This has been a promise many politicians have made. As a matter of fact, it was actually passed into law in the 1990s that it was going to happen, but with 6-month reviews. So presidents basically for the last 20 years have been every 6 months going, "Yeah, we're working on it. We'll get back to it." and not moved because they want to keep the peace. You know, the United States doesn't want to be seen as a provocative influence here, because obviously the Palestinians would be opposed to that. Jordanians would be opposed to that. The Saudis would be opposed to that. There's a lot of, you know, as we're trying to create, you know, our own little network there in the Middle East. It's going to cause a lot of problems, in theory. And the president appears that he's going to make the announcement that he just missed this last cutoff by a day. So in 6 months, they will start to begin the process of moving the embassy to Jerusalem.
Yeah, I guess, you know, this is the president has certainly been willing to go places that, you know, previous politicians haven't been willing to. Sometimes that gives the Republican Party heartburn. Sometimes that's going to make conservatives really happy, and this is another example of the latter, certainly. You know, I think that a lot is still going to play out on this. The State Department has talked about the prospect of violence happening if this were to go through. The White House seems to be committed to it at this point. But I think until it actually is announced by the White House, it's always subject to change, and certainly the White House has changed course a number of times. You know, there was the transgender military ban. There have been a number of things that maybe they announced they were intending to do, but wound up kind of facing the realities of. And certainly, I think that there will be some voices of concern and some, you know, some careful consideration of this.
Aaron, what do you make of the other piece of news today about the FBI investigator who was, you know, the text messages, the anti-Trump text messages were discovered and texting his girlfriend, who happened to be an FBI lawyer, that came up, raising some concerns about objectivity there. You saw the president react in such a strong way, undermining their credibility. But and then you saw the pushback from the FBI saying, no, we're a very credible organization. Is this damaging? Is this concerning? What do you think?
Any time that you're running an investigation like this that is supposed to be impartial, is supposed to be authoritative, these are the kinds of things that you need to avoid like the plague. You know, the FBI has said, and the special counsel's office has said, that they, you know, these people were removed from those positions. There's some question about whether that it occurred in a you know, speedy manner, as it should have. I think it will just reinforce for a lot of people, of course, though, people who already may have been skeptical of Robert Mueller and the investigation because of the campaign contributions of people involved, that this is being run by people who are out to get the president. And to the extent that it reinforces that, I think that it's a troubling development, and I don't think it helps at all, because what, you know, I think there is a sense among some people, particularly on the left in American politics, that when Robert Mueller comes out, if Robert Mueller comes out and finds something that's adversely going to affect the White House in this investigation, that will kind of be it. You know, Congress will move to impeach and things will kind of proceed accordingly. There is a lot depending upon how much the president's supporters and how much Republicans believe that this investigation was credible, that the findings were not predetermined. And so, you know, this is in that regard, this is a major point. And I think that Mueller's probably pretty upset about this right now, that this has become a story. And certainly if you're in a position like those agents were, the idea that this wound up coming out is a major embarrassment.
Yeah, there's a couple of other things happening around Mueller too today that are creating this kind of. It appears that there's a story that the White House that I was pushing back on, that there had been that maybe Mueller's starting to look into the personal finances of the Donald Trump, the kids, or the Trump organization. There has been some pushback on that from the Trump side, saying, "Hey, our bank has not been subpoenaed by anybody." But if that is actually, if they're starting to look into that, that's a red line. This does give, if you get enough stories heading in the right direction that there are people compromised during the investigation on the Mueller side of the investigation, then replacing Mueller with somebody else becomes an easier political move for the president. And I think we're kind of heading toward that as a result of this. And the other, and I'll tell you the other shocking story today that the White House was asked about during the briefing was that there is a lesser reputed organization than the Washington Post in Washington, but reporting that Trump is considering hiring the guy who used to run Blackwater, who owned it, Eric Prince, and some other folks to create a separate intelligence agency that would look into the other intelligence agencies to make sure that they are doing their job the right way, that they're ethically pure. And that would be, they're making the argument in the story. They make the argument that it's legal to do this. It's legal. The president, the executive branch could create another intelligence agency, right? DOJ could do it. Someone out of the executive branch, this could come, and it would be, basically the Trump investigative agency, the TIA. The White House is pushing back, but not very hard on that. What are you hearing?
I guess I'm not too familiar with that report, but I would say, you know, this has been a long running, there's been a long running tension between Trump and the intelligence community, certainly dating back to the Russia report. He initially expressed skepticism that Russia had actually interfered with the 2016 election. He's offered a number of contentions that run counter to their overarching assessment of Russia's interference in the 2016 election. I'm sure there's somebody in the White House who's floating this idea. Maybe the president himself has floated this idea. We'll see whether it actually comes to fruition.
Oh, God.
You never know.
Yeah, I don't count anything out. What, you think 2017 was wacky? Wait till you see 2018. All right. Thank you very much, Aaron. Appreciate it. Aaron Blake from The Washington Post.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, here's Violetta. Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. As the Mark Sapelsa farewell tour continues, he joins us all week to share his most intimate thoughts with Chicagoans. And then on Friday, he will tell everybody to go where exactly to go.
I think he would not. He's too much of a class act for that.
No?
No. That's not how he'll handle it. My prediction.
Okay.
Doesn't seem like something he would do.
I don't know. Maybe he would. Were it me.
Well, we know you.
Yeah. And another thing. And then the next thing you know, I go, and
cut his mic.
And good blanket goodbye.
Cut
we'll
his
do it
mic.
Live. Get that out of the phone. I'm quitting.
No, that's not in his
way
to go out like that. No, he's already kind of, he's put out a gracious note on Twitter and perhaps elsewhere on social media, just thanking everyone for watching and engaging all these years. So,
and all his coworkers on social media are saying farewell and giving a nice quote about him.
That's right. Mark, are you there?
I am there.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, very good. All right.
I thought Pat Thomas Sula had the most touching note to Mark Sapelsa, saying that he could have had him killed, but he didn't, so he appreciated that.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Mark.
Very nice.
Yes, and Morning Show producer Jeff Hoover wonders, moving to Montana, will I become the next manifesto writing Unabomber?
Well, you're an excellent writer.
You are.
We will know that it will make more sense than Ted Kaczynski's.
Ted's didn't make much sense.
No.
It's very hard to decode.
No, very. I mean, obviously, if you're like an MIT guy, maybe it made sense in a doctoral dissertation, but it didn't make any sense
really.
For those of us, you'd make it simple. You'd write for the eighth grader in all of us.
That's right.
All right. I guess there's a lot going on here. Anna was off yesterday, as you know, Mark.
I do.
She gave great congratulations to this show when she got here today to say, hey, I guess you got Todd Stroger out of the county board race. And
I did.
Yeah, and I would say that I don't.
That interview didn't go well.
The interview did not go well, but I don't think that we had much to do with it. I think what happened was the guys that were putting him up to either stalking horse raise money for Tony Preckwinkle, or to raise money for somebody else, or to get money from Tony, or to get something from Tony Preckwinkle, they realized, this isn't even going to work for us.
Well, and Ben Bradley had a report on him, and John Cass did something on him as well, and reminding us of his past. And
Anna, as I mentioned to Ro and Richard yesterday, that, you know, his news conference, that announcing that he was running to take on Tony Preckwinkle about 30 seconds in, I was like, this guy's done. This guy is... Not even close to being ready to. He couldn't even articulate why he wanted to run, other than the fact that, well, I had the idea for this tax, and then I didn't like the soda tax, and she did, and so I might run.
Well, don't you come prepared or armed with answers to prior scandals as well?
I mean, isn't
that something that just sort of becomes?
Yes. And as Ro mentioned yesterday, the $24,999 contract after contract after contract after contract.
Yeah. All legitimate. Except they were $100 short of what would mean you'd need to be transparent.
My intrepid investigative producer, I think, busted the very first person.
I believe that's true.
Who went to jail for that.
Yeah. Oh, gee. There's a surprise.
Jail? Cook County?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just when you get to this point, I'm thinking about moving to Montana with you.
Can we come?
Just when you get to a point where... You know, I was worried about what Washington was doing. Now I'm really worried about what Washington is doing. But I also know on the other side of the coin, when you've got the sitting governor of the state of Illinois, who happens to be a hedge fund billionaire, right?
Yeah.
That was the name of my band in high school, the Hedge Fund Billionaires.
You know, so it sort of works.
That's right, blue and orange. There is, I'll tell you this, there is no one's in charge of anything.
No.
I mean, that's the thing. When you got Democrats in the state of Illinois and in the city of Chicago and the county of Cook and all that, basically not necessarily doing the people's work, but doing work that will help them be people, you know, rich people.
Yep.
You got that. Then you've got Republicans in Washington who are, I don't even know where they're going. They've decided to channel their inner Duck Dynasty. And where is a guy who wants just, you know, responsible government and let people do what they want to do, but also a few guardrails to make sure that the big fish aren't taking advantage of the little fish all day long and the government is supporting them and doing it. And whatever happened to that?
Well,
whatever happened to that post-World War II ethic? Whatever happened to that?
I'm not so sure that Montana's the place.
No. I'm with you on that.
You've got Whitefish, which is not far from me. That's where I ski, and you've got that two-man electric company getting the $300 million contract because they knew these. Whatever, you know.
Yeah, they're part of that too.
Right, they got a state government that passed anti-Sharia law because they were worried about it. Like, what? Come on.
Yeah.
Oh no! You said they need you in Montana, but this is not part of your plan, right,
no,
Mark?
I heard
that you're gonna unhook from the Twitters and the.
I'll unplug. I'll watch. But I'll watch silently. Yes, exactly.
Jeez.
And you go back to Rauner yesterday with that statement about, you know, I'm not in charge. And if I was in charge, then this place would be, you know, Mike Madigan's in charge. I stood right here with him the day that he announced, and everyone said, Who? Bruce Rauner? So we said, call this guy. Please bring him in. And it was when we were doing just the 5:30 news, just a half hour news. And I had the first TV interview with him when he announced, I said, okay, Mr. Rauner, live on TV. My first question is, how are you going to compete and outmaneuver Mike Madigan if, in fact, you win? And, you know, it's like he looked at me like I had three heads. Oh, that's going to be simple. That's going to be simple. I'm going to be the governor. And the governor is in charge.
Yeah. You know, Donald Trump thought the same thing about Obamacare, too. Remember that?
Right.
It'd be so easy. So easy. Can't believe how easy it's going to be. Yeah. Oh, it's more complicated than I thought. It's called a democracy.
That's right.
Right? And people vote. And the one thing Rauner can do, and has been trying to do, although it's a slow and expensive process, is to try to
Flip votes.
Flip votes, re-educate people, yes. Try to change your perspective on this. Try to make them aware. I think most people go through their lives and go, I can't do anything about it anyway. I don't really care. The Bears suck too, so what else am I going to do? So they don't really pay too much attention to it, and maybe they show up to vote and maybe they don't. I mean, you know, half the people who can vote, vote. So it, and that's on a good day.
Right, so on a good day.
So it's about animating a voting block that maybe doesn't exist. Hey, can I speaking of the Mountain West, mm-hmm. may I at the very south end of the Mountain West is that area in Utah that got all the news yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a fascinating story that explains all of this in the political context of why all of this happened. This isn't just And yesterday I was shorthanding it because I was not aware of it all until today. And I just want to share a little bit of it and get your thought on this.
Please do.
Since you're moving into this part of the world.
Yes.
You need to be forewarned. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Well, so what I thought this was about was, you know, Barack Obama, especially on the bear's ears. And this is where the real big thing is here.
Yep.
Barack Obama, late in his presidency, I believe after the election, actually, it's under a year that this extension of the Bears Ears Monument went out as far as it did, the extension of the protected lands by the government.
Right.
Now, these are not lands. The other one, the Escalante one, the Grand Staircase Escalante, that was done by the Clintons.
Clinton administration.
The acreage of that monument has changed a few times over the years.
Okay.
Now, but to bear's ears, and this is where it really gets interesting. The president did this because this five tribe amalgam got together, and they wanted this, and they wanted to keep the people from trampling the antiquities. What had happened was back in 2009-2010. The Bureau of Land Management, in association with the FBI, did an investigation into and Homeland Security, I guess. They got a guy, a local, in one of the towns that is the, you know, like the entrance town to the monument. Mm-hmm. There's four or five of the towns, but the bigger one that has a couple of diners in it. He, I mean, that's true. I'm not trying to take a shot at it. That really is what it is. They got a guy there who was like the town drunk.
Otis.
Itinerant, right? Mm-hmm. And they got him to wear a wire. They gave him $350,000 to go buy antiquities and things from that other people, these other people have been going into the lands and you know, trying to dig up Indian antiquities and other things that they could find. Mm-hmm. That would be of value. And they did, and they looted some of the... And this guy was able to buy $333,000 worth of stuff from the townsfolk.
Wow.
In this. And so the, as they call them in the Mountain West, the jackbooted thugs of the federal government, run by that black guy who's president, showed up and arrested a bunch of people in the town. And this is a small town.
Mm-hmm.
For going in and trespassing on federal lands and stealing the antiquities. I mean, literally taking bones, taking arrowheads, taking mm-hmm. things that they're not supposed to take off the land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they all argued all they were doing was looking for arrowheads, and everybody does that, and they were kicking up arrowheads out of the dirt and just grabbing those and taking them away. So why are you doing this? Well, it turns out that one of the guys that was arrested was the town doctor.
Wow.
He seemed to be like sort of the ringleader of this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the only real medical professional within. And as you know, in these areas, you know, you can go
miles.
You can go 30, 40 miles before you find another doctor, maybe 50 miles. I think in this case, it's 50 to find another doctor. So this guy was the town doctor. And the pressure of this got so much on him, he killed himself.
Oh, my gosh.
People also arrested killed themselves.
No.
Involved in this. And it became a huge cause celeb down there of this is the kind of thing that has been going on. This is an investigation that was from a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. But this, it became a gigantic political thing. This is Washington and the Obama administration and the Democrats and the all the lunatic liberals, and they're coming down. They're trying to take our land away from us, and then they're arresting and they're killing us. They're taking away our heritage, even though these people were stealing the Hopi in the
after we had slaughtered them and moved them into a reservation that they didn't want to be in.
Right. Yeah, but not Hopi, it was actually now, I forgot, it was a Ute or Mountain Ute or something like that.
Probably
but
is
that's
the Utes.
That's mm-hmm. That's what this is. So whatever if I'm going to get in my soapbox, I should probably get that part right. Anyway, the point is that you've got these. So it became this big political football in southern Utah.
Interesting.
And so people who are running for Congress in the area and people in local and, the governor of the state, this became a big issue in Utah, the southern part of Utah specifically. So when he went and he did this, that's why there was such. This is why the story, news from nowhere, a story you never heard of before.
Yes.
Yep. Why it's been a huge story for them. And the president steps in and he's basically saying to them, hey, I hear you. This, Obama did this and these people died and I'm going to go make this all right for you, even though they were wrong in the first place for what they were doing.
Right. So basically, you big, dumb, liberal, big government, get your hands off our land here that we stole from the Indians and now we're selling stuff from
the Native
Americans.
We're selling the Indian chieftain's skull.
Right. And so we were wrong and we committed suicide because we were wrong. But you know what? Knock it off because we don't want big government around here.
Right. So it's a big deal. I mean, that's why. And it's a fascinating story.
That's
in
a
and
great
of itself.
Yarn.
Yeah.
It is.
It really
great
is.
Backstory. Helps to understand it more. But how much of it is about energy? Isn't there sort of.
There's not going to be. It turns out that
minerals,
there's
maybe, no.
less to do with that than even yesterday that it was being presented in the news, even by me, because I thought, well, that must be what it is.
Right, it
there must
like
be some drilling right
thing.
Guy. Mm-hmm. Even the people there who are the pro energy people are like, yeah, I mean, we'd like to do some exploration. They've already done some exploration in this area. And it's hard to get to. Like the coal would be harder. It's deeper than normal. There'd be cheaper places to find it than this. But they still want to have the right to go look and see if there's other things. And that's basically what they're getting. So it's good for the energy and mining business that wants to get in, and energy speculators who want to get in there. And it's good for people who feel like the big government trampled on their right to go take the arrowheads off the ground in this area and maybe steal a few bones from a grave. I don't know, whatever you're into. And maybe the doctor was doing it just because he's doing his own lab, right? That's how every creepy movie starts from the 1930s Universal thing. It was like, some wild dog. I'm gonna put the chieftain back together. But if you are part of this council, this five tribe council of Native Americans, you don't agree on anything except for this one deal, then you're like, well, wait, what happened to us? But they figure that, well, they're not going to vote. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter.
They're basically saying, oh, it happened again to us.
I think there are some who would be arguing that, yes.
Yeah.
So it's
I understand the difference. You know, the compromise between jobs, whether it be, like you said, mining, research, energy, what have you, and the town's folks that could use jobs there, no question.
Well, and that's what they say. It would be better to have jobs here than this, because even this as a they went to Bill Weir did amazing reporting, by the way. Channel 9's was very own.
Right.
Bill Weir is now at CNN, where he went in, he hiked in with guides into this area, and there's one cliff that's got these cliff, the 300, 400 year old cliff drawings on them, art on them, and it's bullet hole pocked.
Oh my god!
With large caliber modern weapons, people would go in to this area and shoot up that monument because it was just something to go, because it looks like it's a bunch of targets, because there's like an onyx, design, and there's some other things in it. And so there wasn't a ton of not a whole lot of like adventure tourism and that sort of stuff that was going on there. Maybe there will be now because it is gorgeous. It's amazing when you see
the pictures. Really does. There are a number of legal challenges though moving forward. So we'll have to see if the president's decision here sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the West.
There you go,
Mark. I think I'm really going to enjoy your time in Montana.
Across the Mississippi, and that's what I'm facing.
That's what Lewis and Clark faced, too.
They came right over the mountains where we live. We know that for sure.
Are you going to be doing fly fishing and all that stuff
sure.
I picture in Montana?
Yeah, already done it. I need a little practice, but we've done it. Yeah.
Are you going to wear all the clothes from the turn of the century, like a river runs through it? Are you going to drive in like a Model T and then?
Well, we're selling everything here, so I will have to get some buckskin somewhere.
That is a beautiful movie, by the way.
If people have not seen
that movie, that is.
It was shot in our town.
Was it?
You can believe it. Yeah.
Like the downtown part of the town?
Well,
when they're standing on the courthouse steps and stuff?
Our little river there was where it was shot. The Swan River, the Flathead and Swan River.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good old Swan River.
Good for you, man. Yeah. I mean, there's something so amazingly romantic about this notion. I'd say 6 months from now, you're going to want to move back to the big city. But the idea of this is great. And I think there's an amazing book in this. I don't know that you've reached out to a publisher yet. I'm pretty sure you have.
But if
you haven't, this is something you want. Just something to think about.
Are you going to get bored, Mark? Is that your big? Is that a concern for you at all?
No, not at all.
Busy life?
Yeah, like I said, my wife early on was saying, you know how many hours in the day there are? You know, one of those deals. And I said, no, honey, I'm telling you, I'm pretty good at balance, pretty good at compartmentalizing my day, kind of, like I said, boringly industrious, where I can whittle away and not literally whittle on sticks and things like that in the woods, but, you know, I can figure out some things to do. And then at some point, you know, I might do something a little grander, like, let me write a talk about what the heck I've been doing the last 5 years. I don't know.
I think there's something to that. You know, this is exactly what Major said, too, by the way, a year and a half ago when I'm very good with my own time.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing you know, he's got a poker coach.
He's texting you?
Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing tonight? What are you doing tonight?
You want to get dinner?
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. I'll come over. I'll watch your game. Come on.
I love the Major's text. Hey, want to have lunch? Sure. I said, give me your schedule. He goes, I mean,
at noon.
Right.
I'm open.
He said, I am free Monday through Sunday, but only then.
He actually has got a lot going on.
He does.
Yeah,
like
he's
it.
Traveling the country and doing. I think he's going to become. You're going to see him on the seniors tour of the poker. He's going to be the guy with his glasses on upside down and his hat backwards and a gold chain.
Right. Sunglasses.
Yes. You're going to be.
Is
seeing
he getting
him
good at it?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
This is his big new thing.
Hired a poker coach. How about that? Wow.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I'm not sure. I'm certain I wasn't supposed to say that publicly, but he has. I just want to say that. Yeah.
Sorry. Ron.
Just get a text any moment now.
Yeah. It's all right. All right, Mark. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Mark.
Thank
Great.
You, sir. 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10, like he cares. That's what's coming up.
Whatever.
That's right. All right. Here's Violetta with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. That's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A couple of things. As you're traveling for the holidays, something to think about? A little something?
A lot of people are.
Yeah. Let me run something past you here.
Sure. Let's hear it.
Airbnb? You people like the Airbnb?
I like the Airbnb.
Never done it.
Good experiences.
Yeah, good experiences
in
the Airbnb?
I used it in Greece. It was great.
Great. Love the Airbnb, right?
Yes.
Okay.
What are you going to tell us?
Are you going to make us not love the Airbnb?
You always ruin stuff. Come on.
Is there a rival yet to Airbnb? Like there's Lyft and Uber. Is there an alternate option?
There's VRBO, mm-hmm. which there's a couple.
That was before Airbnb,
HomeAway. Some of them are
I've used those a million times.
Some of them merged now, too, because I think HomeAway and VRBO are together.
I only stay at the Four Seasons.
What's the problem, Ro?
New York Post story. Airbnb has a scary problem on their hands.
That's your kid.
Uh-oh.
People keep finding hidden cameras in their rental homes.
Oh,
seen
gee.
It 100 times.
That's so scary.
They just want to make sure everything's under control.
Shocker.
I believe you legally have to say that you have cameras.
Over the toilet?
Home. Well, that's a bad place.
Especially
then you're
over
not going to want to say
toilet.
Over the bed?
Anywhere. You have to mention that.
You're just not going to
Oh, sure.
Say.
Yeah.
All right, guys, enjoy your stay. Have fun. There's cameras everywhere. See you later. Bye.
When you go to the bathroom. Yeah, I don't know how you
Why
say
would
that.
Someone even want to see someone going to the bathroom?
Yeah, these are other questions.
The New York Post said, that's a thing now news, as they like to say. A colleague thought it odd when they went into the bedroom of their Airbnb to find what they thought was a motion sensor.
Oh, gee. Like they have one of those spray things, you know, when you move by, it sprays like a perfume.
Right. Or lights. Right. There's motion sensors for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as a camera.
Oh.
How did they, so they
connected to the web?
Oh my gosh!
Mm-hmm.
Not right, totally not right.
So at 3 a.m., he called his host.
Hostess with the mostest.
And did he say, "I'm going to own your home"?
Yes.
In a couple months. Okay.
Would you like a refund instead? I could do that for you.
And I'm not cleaning up either.
And just a tweet on the story. There were 23,000 retweets, 30,000. Likes on this because apparently this is not an unusual circumstance. In response, Airbnb has now released a statement saying that they have permanently banned the homeowner from their site that was doing this.
Gosh, but you'd have to figure it out as a guest in order for that to happen.
And supported our guests with a full refund and reimbursement for expenses incurred. Now, I don't know when all of a sudden the D-pics are going to show up on the internet. I don't know how that's going to help you.
I think they have a case there, too, don't they? Just post
perhaps.
People's videos of them changing.
What's the background check like? Like for Uber, you know, they do some sort of a background check. To be a host, what do you have to do? Is it similar?
They figure out whether or not you own the property, and that's figured out. But then I think it largely comes down to reviews in terms of how people their experience.
Right. I think they put you up on the site and then, you know, the first person who doesn't report back after having their Airbnb.
Lost one. No stars.
Right. They wait for the first person who escaped their tormentor to actually post a half star on it. Because it was a nice room before he tied me to the chair and then tried to torture me.
Yeah, it's a beautiful stay until I saw my video of me going to the bathroom on the internet a month later.
How about that?
Imagine. They should have to check your basement.
You know, I mean, this is I hate to go
but is
back
this surprising
to it. I'm kind of old school.
All?
I'm very 20th century. I liked when there were rules. I liked the idea. I mean, this is, you know, it was a funny thing a couple weeks ago. You know, one of those BuzzFeed list things that, you know, you wouldn't have done 20 years ago.
Yes.
Things you do now you wouldn't do 20 years ago, which is literally getting into a stranger's car. Right?
Oh, you guys hitchhiked all the time. People on the side of the road, thumbs out. Come
on. Did you do that, Ro?
I'm sorry, what?
Not you, but people. I've seen it in movies a lot.
You didn't hitchhike,
Ro? That one guy who was either the perpetrator or victim of a murder.
You didn't hitchhike?
That was a thing.
No, I'm sorry, Judy. I did not hitchhike.
It was really not a thing.
Did?
I did.
In other countries?
In college, always with other people. And you know how bad we were? We would turn rides down all the time.
Yeah, but that was Judy holding a gun to the driver's head. Drive, punk!
No, I would just stand in the middle of the street. Stop.
I'll drive your car now.
Right. Yeah, we definitely hitchhiked.
No, there was this...
It's like when Batman gets in a car when, he's got to catch up with somebody.
Drive.
There was an elderly woman who would drive us to school all the time. She was great.
Separate issue. And you know, and the hitchhiker is no longer with us because they're extinct now.
Right.
They're like the Neanderthal. They couldn't keep up with the times. Natural selection.
They're actually driving for Uber now.
But the point is that
times were different. That's why. Times were different back then.
Now, I mean, still, right? I mean, would you go and, you know, pay money to go stay in other people's homes? No, you would pay money to avoid staying in other people's homes. And now this is what we're doing.
Everyone does it. It's acceptable.
It's about the shared experience.
It's a couple bad apples.
Yeah, shared on the internet.
Well, it's just a couple bad apples. I don't want to believe it's everyone.
Okay, are you doing it are you doing it coming up? Do you know? When you were in Greece, did you look around? Did you do that James Bond thing when you walk into the room and you walk around with some sort of like a bug detector?
Yeah, you do a sweep.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. But you know what? I was a little bit concerned one time recently in, not Michigan City, but the one past there, New Buffalo.
Yeah.
We rented a house, and it was
What was not so
what
nice?
Happened,
I don't know. There were like big grates.
Don't hurt Anna's feelings. It might have been her house.
It was not Anna's house because hers would be pristine. There were like grates on the floor. It was a beautiful home, but so I could see the basement, and it just
creeped you out a little bit.
It creeped me
there
out.
There were grates looking down into the basement?
Yeah. Was there any moaning coming down?
Yeah, was there a pit down there? Whoa.
See, I've heard stories of people showing up at rental houses, like an Airbnb, and there's like nothing in the house but like industrial lights, like a second-rate photo shoot or something was going on there.
Like it's just a chair.
Oh, photo shoot, right.
Yeah, photo shooter.
Maybe a video.
Maybe a video if you want to go crazy. But there's two industrial lights and like a chair. And a
couch. People have told me that when they've rented homes, they've gotten notes from the owner saying stuff like, you know, why did you move so-and-so over or something? Leading them to believe, how do you know I moved such-and-such over when I put it back?
Why did you move my hidden cameras?
I was trying to watch you all weekend.
Right. You totally ruined my viewing experience.
So did that guy stay in the house after he found the camera watching him?
Well, cameras, by the way, here's how Airbnb had to respond to this. Mm-hmm. They released a statement saying that they permanently banned the homeowner, and despite prior reports, a spokesperson told BuzzFeed on Monday that finding cameras in rental homes is incredibly rare, unless you're in a rental home.
Well, outside is okay because it's surveillance of the outside, but the inside?
Well,
the bathroom?
Here are the rules. Cameras are never allowed in bathrooms or bedrooms. Any other cameras must be properly disclosed to guests ahead of time.
Like in the living room or in the kitchen, if there's a sign that says, hey, there's a camera here?
Mm-hmm. Don't do that thing on the kitchen floor that you won't do in your own house.
Smile, you're on camera, like all over the house.
Which is understandable, but make it blatant. Make it blatant that there are cameras in
is
the public areas. Sort of. Right?
An Indiana couple found they were at Florida Airbnb and they found cameras in the bedroom disguised as a smoke detector. See, that's why you gotta do the sweep.
Bad.
You gotta do the sweep.
One of the ways you can do a sweep, you turn off all the lights, you shine your flashlight off your phone all around to see if you get any glare or the red light or anything.
Pro tip. And then you can also
scan on the web the Wi-Fi to see what's linked up. Because usually they give you a Wi-Fi passcode and they tell you what it is so you can see what's internet connected. Cameras might
right.
be also.
There's no one around for miles and there's three people attached to the internet? Oh.
The router's labeled hidden camera network.
Bathroom cam.
forgot to relabel that one. Damn it.
Right. Over the bed.
Bed cam.
I wonder what these mean. Over
toilet
the bed.
Cam.
Over the toilet.
Under toilet cam.
Oh.
Floor hidden in the floor in front of the toilet cam.
Oh. I knew we forgot to do something.
Toilet tank cam. There's like a whole thing. I got it. There's a whole complex of cameras around there. Sort of like, you know, 3D. It's like an NFL game.
Right. They got that rope camera that goes over the
and the imaginary
sky cam.
Line sky, that comes up.
Sky cam one. There's like a droid like floating around the house.
You know what's interesting? You always see like in celebrities always do these Airbnbs and then they boast about it. They probably get it for free and then they talk about it on Instagram or whatever and they say, check out my cool pad in, you know, Mexico. Airbnb, whatever. And you wonder in those cases, you'd think if there were cameras linked up.
They brought their own cameras.
You would get, I don't know, they might try to make some money off that.
I don't seem to understand what the problem is here. If I did not have camera monitors to look at to see what all of you people were doing upstairs, including in the pooper and the peeper, I would have nothing to do all day.
Creepy Uncle puts his basement on Airbnb. It's like, oh,
right.
He actually just puts our rooms on Airbnb.
Oh, no.
He's trying to run a business here.
Kevin, I want you to meet your new roommate, Todd.
All right. Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spots. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Our favorite time of day.
Yeah, it is, Anna. It really is.
It truly is.
It's blustery outside.
And we need people to feel a little warmer about the world we live in.
I don't know if this is going to do it.
The top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Taplantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Yes, they do.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, if you say so. Here we go. Checking in at
number five.
Last night, Billy Bush appeared on The Late Show and spoke at length with the Stephen Colbert about the infamous moment live in front of Access Hollywood cameras on that bus.
Like I said, you can't say that. That is your voice. I was there. You were there. That's your voice on the tape. And what that does, though, is multiple. I told you about my own personal problem with it. But then you've got 20 women at the time. I don't know what the exact number is because there's more, but 20 women who used their names. We've got powerful people being held accountable now. 20 women don't get together and say, hey, you know, it'll be really fun. Let's take down a powerful guy together. Ha ha. No, they don't. And their names are. And I said, OK, you're reopening wounds on them, too. Enough's enough. Stop playing around.
Gee. I openly speculated this morning on the, or this afternoon, whenever the hell that TV show's on.
Mm-hmm. Windy City Live.
Thank you. That's the one.
Great show.
Billy Bush, who, by the way, looks more and more like his uncle, George W. Bush, now than ever.
Yeah, a little bit. You're right. And yeah, I can see that.
He is, I wonder if he, now that he's kind of done in television, we're going to get to that in just a second, but would he run for public office?
I don't know. I still wonder what was his terrible offense in this case?
Because he laughed and
he went along with it.
And then he said, hey, give Donald a hug or a kiss or whatever.
He was sort of promoting him going and kind of planting a kiss on somebody.
Right.
By
today's standards set by Harvey Weinstein, this is really not come watch me take a shower. That this is not an offense.
No, I think his explanation was interesting, though, because he said at the time it was 2005 and The Apprentice ratings were through the roof and he was making a ton of money, Donald Trump was, for NBC. And he said that all of us felt we had to kiss the ring and kind of go along with him and, you know, kind of.
Which is how every female feels in these sexual harassment situations.
That's a good point. It's a good point. You feel like someone else has the power and the control, and so you have to act in a way that doesn't. That goes along with their behavior, or else suffer the consequences.
Billy Bush, in his whatever tour this is that he's on, is there a book? There must be a book or something, right? That he's written.
This is his comeback.
I think so. Yeah, he said he went to some kind of rehab or clinic where he thought about life and how to be a better man. And
Billy, my life in the bush.
Oh,
he is.
Ouch.
That means Africa. Anyway, the point is, he's out in the. He's out doing this, and he kind of had it both ways. He initially said, well, listen, we all knew what he was talking about, but it was like a stand-up comedy act. He was like a dirty shock jock. We didn't take him seriously. We didn't believe what he was saying. Mm-hmm. That was what he originally said. On Sunday, there was a print piece that came out in which he said that, which was like, yeah, but he was just bragging, and we figured it was just a guy bragging.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's turned into that. The whole thing, it wasn't my voice on the tape, has changed the dynamic of this.
Yeah.
But again, the president never said that publicly. I mean, I'm not in the business of feeling a great amount of sympathy for Donald Trump because he courts his own disaster here. But, you know, we now, I think, in mass, have accepted the notion that he said that that's not his voice on the tape, and so we're reacting to it as though he tweeted that or he said that. That was according to people who claim that he said that to them. Now, these are independent people, so I don't doubt that he actually said it, but it's not like he's making the pronouncement publicly. You know, him musing to people individually, oh my God, just imagine the crazy things that he's mused to people.
Yeah.
What if I
put an electrified
fence around the entire country and then everybody who tried to get next to it would just get zapped? What would happen then?
What if I started my own?
Would that be okay?
No.
What if I started my own Airbnb and put
cameras
everywhere?
What if I put cameras in everybody's bedroom? Could I do that?
Why is there only a smoke detector above the bed? It's really weird.
A lot of smoke detectors in this house.
But only over the toilet and the bed. It's very strange. In the shower.
So in the wake of numerous sexual harassment scandals, Stephen Colbert was like, you know, you lost your job, but what about that Matt Lauer?
Matt Lauer controlled that show. He could have protected anybody, and he did famously protect people from being fired on that show. Do you wish he would have protected you?
We had a conversation about that, and he told me that he went privately to the bosses and took that line, and I said I appreciated it, and I accepted it and thanked him.
Okay. So, yeah. You believe he did what he could?
Yeah, I would have liked, I will say, I would have liked the chance to have been able to address the audience.
You know, he was rushed off that show, but remember the heat of the moment in the campaign.
There was a debate coming up. I could have sworn the next night or something. This came out, and it was the central issue, and there he was right in the middle of it.
And they did not want him, NBC News didn't want to get swept up into this. If they could have only had a crystal ball and seen what was going to happen with the whole fake news thing a year later.
How far they would get swept up into it.
All right. And if they only had a crystal ball about Lauer, too. But there they did. Go. They knew what was going on there.
I believe they knew more than they've let on about that.
There's someone Airbnb you don't want, Matt Lauer's house.
Would
automatic you, locking doors.
Now, here's the question. If you knew Matt Lauer was going to use your Airbnb, would you put cameras in?
Maybe.
Right. Number four.
President Trump says that he thinks the Republican candidate Roy Moore is going to do very well in the special election, despite the allegations from these women that he was inappropriate with teenagers, including touching a girl when she was 14 and he was 32. But despite that, he's going to be, this is Sarah Huckabee Sanders for both. Okay. So earlier in the day, he had said, no, he's going to do great. So then, and the president said he doesn't want a liberal in there. He doesn't want it's better to have somebody who's going to be, you know, with his agenda, essentially, is what he said in a spray this morning.
Tough on immigration, tough on a border wall. You know,
all those things, all the right? Things. That's all the theme things. Now is you'd rather have this guy who hasn't admitted to anything. Then that's the key, gentlemen. Remember, don't admit. Don't ever admit. Who are you going to believe?
What if there's me photographic proof?
Or your lion eyes? That's what you got. That's what you got to say there. Even if there's photographic proof, that wasn't me. Even if there's audio proof.
I don't remember it that way.
That is not what happened. Just deny everything. Anyway, the point is this.
Yes.
So Sarah Huckabee Sanders was, you're welcome, the pro tip. Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked about this at the press briefing today.
I'm wondering how the president reached the conclusion that all of Moore's accusers, including those who have put forward evidence, are lying.
Didn't say they were lying. The president's position hasn't changed, still finds those concerning. But as we've also said, the president feels that he would rather have a person that supports his agenda versus somebody who opposes his agenda every step of the way. And until the rest of that process plays out, you have a choice between two individuals, and the president's chosen to support Moore.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to stop you right there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just stop for a minute. I just OB'd that right there. I just screamed into the microphone.
You're going to pound on the table too, like OB does?
I might do it. Okay. What she just acknowledged was this. I think it would have been better for her to say, oh, yeah, he thinks they're lying. That would have been better than what she said. What she said was, again, I mean, you heard it, but let me just put it in context.
Okay, let's hear it.
That makes me feel better. This isn't about, I mean, the listeners already heard it. I don't have to do this, but I'm doing this just to make myself feel better. What I think she just did, tell me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yeah, he still believes the women, but listen. I mean, come on. It was a long time ago, and we need this guy's vote. We need the vote. So, yeah, sure, he was 32. He invited this 14-year-old over to his house a couple of times. Second time he was there, laid out blankets on the floor, and then had her take her pants off, and he touched her over her underwear, and all that. It's fine. He did all that.
The Onion has a headline. RNC endorses Roy Moore. He's a scumbag, but he's our scumbag.
Right. That's basically the truth. That's what she's saying. But you know what? Hey, listen. It's better to have a guy who would do that than a liberal.
Right. Than well, someone who's pro-abortion.
The question, though, is, I mean, when you're voting, are you voting politically or for the person and the quality of them? Now, well, if you're here, voting only on the politics.
Let me give you a pro tip, because you're you know, you're new to this.
Right.
Country and everything else that goes on with it.
The world.
The
okay.
world. You're new to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And to this political awareness. What one can learn is when you vote, and you've seen examples of this, pretty great examples of this in public life. Bill Clinton is an excellent example of this in public life.
Mm-hmm.
That you know about stuff about these guys beforehand, right? That Bill Clinton was a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Tough dog, keep on that porch. That's what they used to say about him in Arkansas. Next thing you know, he's having the sexual relations with the intern. Right?
Right.
People don't change. So the point here is that Roy Moore, and he hides behind the Bible and the whole thing, and about how, you know, he's, you know, the righteousness, and even his own defenders. He has a woman who's defending him today, who's like a spokesperson for the campaign, you know, last minute spokesperson for the campaign,
mm-hmm.
who's out there saying, well, what about all the women that didn't complain about him?
She said that?
Yes.
Hmm.
So, I mean, this is, and then the guy who came out and said, well, you got to remember, you know, Mary, the mother of God, you know, was a teenage girl.
Sure. I agree with all that, but there's two schools of thoughts. And obviously you believe you should take the quality of the person and their morals into mm-hmm. consideration when voting for them. But some people might think that you only vote on the politics.
The irony of this is that the religious right, which is supporting Roy Moore vigorously in Alabama, have for decades tried to destroy people based on their personal behavior when they were running for office. And now they're looking the other way on this one because he's their guy.
Touche.
So there you have it. So it really isn't about, so what we have to now stipulate for Republicans and people on the religious right and all that it isn't really about personal behavior and responsibility.
Well, that's morality. You see a lot of Republicans coming out saying this isn't the party I know of if this is someone we're going to now support.
But they're still going to vote for him. He's going to win. He's going to win going away in Alabama. Don't believe for a second the polls that say that he is close. These are people who are not coming. They're showing tracking right now that's got him up significantly in this.
Republican Senator Jeff Flake just wrote a check to his rivals' campaign saying country over party is going to be contributing to the Democrat.
All right, we get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, Violetta's got the WGN Traffic Travel Spots. Thanks for stopping by for the lecture.
They'd probably say no. Flashback to the 80s, laugh along with the Goldbergs, starring Chicago's very own Jeff Garlin, weeknights at 10:30 and 11 on WGN-TV.
It's interesting. Got my attention.
Yeah.
All right, top 5-5 continues. Checking in at
number 3.
A South Suburban man says that he has 8 days to pay his family's water bill, or they're going to shut off the water. Now, why is this a story? This is why this is a story. He's a pastor, Derek Williams. He's lived in Sauk Village for almost 2 decades, and he's always paid his utility bill on time, but he started getting some wacky bills that came in, including one for $5,000 on his meter. Now, he says he had the meter changed twice to try to fix this problem. The water company says, no, the village, you owe the money.
Jeez.
It's not a company, it's the village. You owe the money. He's been trying to get a hold of the mayor of Sauk Village, and I guess I'm answering the call.
My average bill was $138. Sometimes it'll go to $200, and those were estimates at the time. I immediately wrote a letter to the mayor as well as the trustees. It's funny, you see them when they run for office. They're all everywhere. You throw a rock, you hit them. But when the little man, so to speak, need them, you can't hear from them. I can't pay $5,000 for a water bill. I don't know anyone that pays $5,000 for a water bill.
Gee, that is a huge right. bill right there, a whopping size bill.
Right. The Gosh. Tribune Tower doesn't pay $5,000 for a water bill. I mean, I don't know what they pay.
It is for his church? Or they don't even know.
I think it's for his home.
For his home.
It's for his home.
Couldn't you leave the water on every day, all day, and still not get a $5,000?
Does he have a leak? I guess that's the question.
Let's start looking into this. There's something there.
We might want to start looking at.
Gosh. You feel for him, though.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope, you know, maybe the mayor is getting some attention is being paid to this today.
I would think so. They got to pick up his call.
At least, you know, have a conversation with him. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's two sides to this story. I would love to know what the other side is.
Sure.
If there is one, because it doesn't seem to make a ton of sense.
Doesn't at all.
But it could be a 60 Minutes thing. But in fact, he was shipping water to China.
Oh,
geez. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem right.
It doesn't.
I think we've got... Hello, Mayor of Sauk Village. Call the pastor back.
Just call him.
And
right?
Work it out.
He deserves a call.
All right. Checking in at
number two.
Remember when Randy Travis got arrested for DUI mm-hmm. in Arizona? And, he was like naked in the car, took off all his clothes because he got hot. Remember this a couple years ago?
Sure.
Classic driving naked.
2012. This is when this happens. It's 5 years ago already. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Classic drunk, take off all your clothes. Well, because it's 5 years ago now, the audio has been released. And the video.
The video, more importantly.
Yes, of this. And, it's exactly as we thought it would go.
I'll pray for you to have the biggest growth on your head that will make you so damn... Watch this, motherfucker. Watch this. You insult me, man. You insult me. You damn insulted me.
How did I insult you, Mr. Travis?
You insulted me by locking me up in a damn cage, basically, with handcuffs behind me with my hanging out. Now, and I'm proud of my it's bigger than most, but you insulted me. You're a dead man.
Not his proudest moment. Even if he is proud.
Yeah. Now, I will admit that mine is larger than most.
Jeez.
He's got that going for him.
I do have this going. Would you like to take a look at it again?
He's going to want to take that back.
Here you go. There it is right there on your desk.
Yeah.
Want me to do that again? I'll do it again. Right there. There it is on the desk.
They knew who he was, though, right? So they were.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's like, yeah, Mr. Travis. Yeah.
Kind of like
this is what you know. It makes so much sense when you're drunk when this is happening, right?
I don't know if that makes sense. Does that?
Well,
make
have you
sense?
Ever gotten into an argument where you were drunk and you're like, and then the next
and the
day you're like,
you tried to recount some of the facts,
right? And then you were like,
wait a minute.
Oh, did I really
did
make
I,
that
did
argument?
I say that?
I don't
That's
think
true.
I was
That's
I right
true.
About that. That I mean, he did threaten the officer there. Like, you're a dead man. You can't say that.
No.
And I think you're also not supposed to whip it out.
Now, and I'm proud of my. It's bigger than most. But you insulted me.
Maybe he's planning on throwing a haymaker with it.
I kind of like the... Oh, God, no. Come on, we'll get a little closer. There you go.
Take that.
Oh,
Take
gee.
That. Here, one more time. There you go. Hold on. Air, ow.
He did have a bruised eye. Maybe he hit himself.
Yeah, exactly. Running away, right? I don't know. Oh, God, Randy Travis. Wait, there's more?
There's more.
Okay. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Mr. Travis, can you tell me what happened in the crash?
I don't know. I don't give a rat's ass. You damn got the right to do me this way? Mother no, you don't. Oh, hell no, you don't. You'll die, mother.
Travis, what did I do to you?
You put these damn handcuffs on me. If you'd have told me get in this car and you wouldn't have put these damn handcuffs on me, no, I'd have prayed for you to have help for this.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, boy.
He had also walked into a convenience store naked that night. There's a lot of disorientation going on there.
Take a look at this. You have a bun that would cover this? I don't think so.
Now, and I'm proud of my it's bigger than most, but... You insulted me.
Yes.
Oh, God. All right. We're going to count that as 2-1. That was so good.
Okay. think it's deservedly so.
Yeah, I think it's time to get out of this now. Oh, my God. Oh, and you know what? He sings so pretty, too.
The top five at five.
Coming up, Jim Peterick's going to join us. He's got a new Christmas song. He's going to debut here.
Just saw him in the green room.
And we're going to do Ides Christmas show at the Arcata on December 16th.
Nice.
That is not to be missed right there.
I can't wait for the new Christmas song.
The horn section wears Santa hats. All right, listen. Pat Brady is with us. He is... Pat, I'm glad you're joining us. You used to run the Illinois Republican Party, and we appreciate all your fine service, but those days are over. Now, as a matter of fact, the Republican Party is over. The Republican Party, as you knew it, is over. In Illinois and in the nation, the governor just yesterday said, listen, I'm not in charge. It's that other guy that's in charge. I get what he's doing. There's a political calculation to it, mm-hmm. right, that he's trying to basically say, listen, unless you start to vote the Democrats out and Republicans in, nothing's ever going to change around here. Okay, message received. We got it. Now, on the national level, on the national stage, do you recognize this party? Because the president is about to have a really big run of successes here. I'm going to articulate them for you in just a second. But he can be invincible within 6 months. Do you think America will be safe as a Republican with Donald Trump as an invincible, and the Republican Party will be safe as Donald Trump invincible?
Invincible, you mean for a reelect or invincible within the Republican Party?
With just period, that he's going to win. He will have co-opted enough of Republicans and enough of the party and taken them in his direction of politics, which is pure populism and, you know, the efficiencies of political expedience, which is I just got to do what we got to do. What we got to do to get the votes. Doesn't matter how we do it. We're going to do it.
Well, on top of that, if you look at how the primary works in the presidential in 2.5 or 3 years right now, I don't see how anybody could beat him the way it's set up. You go in states like Iowa and New Hampshire, which he won big, and then to South Carolina, and you get the big enough lead, no one can challenge you. But I don't think he's invincible. But I do agree that he's had a good run here. We're going to get this tax bill done. And despite what the Democrats say, I think it will be seen as a big success and something that maybe not be super popular right now. But when the market keeps continuing to do what it does and people get pay less tax next time around, they're going to be happy about it.
It's going to be very interesting for people when they pay less tax on their when they all of a sudden see changes in their checks in 2018. They'll be like, yeah, OK, I'm with this. Mm-hmm. And then in 2019, after the midterm elections, and they are waiting for their April 15th tax rebate, their return, to get their overage back, they don't get it, or they get a lot less than they expected. That's going to be a different situation. And I know it's one thing to say, well, you got it before, that'll be the argument. Well, you got the extra money, but I don't know that people are necessarily going to like that.
Well, I think, but it's a win for him, and it's a win for people that are his supporters, the 35-40% of the country that actually strongly supports him. So he is kind of on a roll. And you were saying listen on the way in, Roy Moore's going to win down right there. He's going to win big. And to me, when you ask the initial question, is this a party I recognize? I didn't know we supported perverts. Well, we are now. And that's disturbing to me. We've kind of, there's no morality left in what we did. And I know the Democrats like to claim the moral high ground, which to me is a bunch of nonsense. We're supposed to be the party that stands for something. We were founded by Abraham Lincoln. I mean, we're supposed to be the party that stands for things that matter on the national stage and on the international stage. And for the Republican National Committee and the president now to throw in with this pervert down in Alabama, that probably in the long run is going to be very harmful to the party because people like me and others that are more moderate are going to go somewhere else.
Where are you going to go, though?
That's a good question.
That's his calculation. Where are you going to go?
And it's the same calculation the Democrats have. Right now, the Democrats are one run by Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, which is as far to the left as Trump might. Trump's not to the right. Just Trump's out in his own world. And they're struggling with the same thing, but I don't think I've ever seen a time more ripe for a third party.
But why do you think the GOP did decide to fund this race? Wouldn't it have been easier if he was going to win, as you both suggest, just to kind of stand back and let the voters decide, and then you don't necessarily claim everything that goes along with a Roy Moore candidate? You saw Mitt Romney and others are writing op-ed pieces saying we've lost the integrity of our party. It really seems to have stirred up quite a hornet's nest within the party.
Sure, but the short answer is the Republican National Committee, or even the Democratic National Committee, when you have the presidency, that's the president's committee. So the president tells you what to do.
Right.
There's no discretion there. So they said, get down.
Yeah, but the Republican Senatorial Committee is, what are they going to do?
Well, they've all kind of backed off a little bit and said, I don't think they're getting in. At least we haven't seen it yet. But even McConnell and others over the last 24 hours said, it's up to the citizens of Alabama to make that choice, which is a coward's way out. But
he was calling for him to step aside earlier.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago when the polls, when he was down 8 points.
Yeah, but now that he's down 3 in the last poll that I saw. But,
we're with you.
But there's tracking that shows that this, by the president jumping in and the president saying, hey, listen. I mean, the argument is this. Hey, we need his vote. Yeah, we're still, what Sarah Huckabee Sanders said today from the White House was that we're still... we're disturbed by the allegations, but let's face it, we need him. So does that mean that if this guy, let's say he was, an inveterate racist and he was, unapologetic about it, he's got his own issues there, but if like somebody who popped up out of the white nationalist movement ran for Congress, which I think is likely to happen in 18.
Honestly, I don't see a whole lot of difference between a white nationalist and a homophobe child molester. I mean, child molester, as bad as it is to be a white supremacist, child molester to me is just about as low as you can go.
All right, let me ask you about this. The other piece that's probably going to pop here, of the things that the president is going to win, at least for his base, he's going to have Roy Moore. He's going to have on the Supreme Court. He's probably going to get a win on the gay wedding cake case. Now,
yeah.
I mean, depending on how Kennedy goes here, but it looks like Kennedy might based on the questioning.
He's going to get a travel ban win too.
He's going to get the travel ban win, and he may get the gay wedding cake. Now,
what else he's probably going to get is the case that came out here, the Janus case on the union issue. I think he'll get that win too.
So we'll deal with that on another day.
Yeah.
But in terms of these social conservative things, which really are 30% winners in national and 0%, fringe winners in northern and industrialized states, in the gay, in terms of, can you have a company or a private company, a private individuals have a bakery, let's say, because this is the exact case. You got the bakery. The people say, well, for religious reasons, we will not do a gay wedding cake. Now, if you want us to do the penis cake for the
bachelorette party, that's what I love.
We're all down with that. But we will not do two guys on the top of the wedding cake. I mean, will you, if you have that, if they uphold, it's going to be, I don't know how they uphold it, because.
I'm sorry, I'm going to laugh all day hearing you just say that.
We were talking about that earlier, because there's some hypocrisy in here.
But it is true.
He said penis cake. I'm like,
that's going to be out of context with Nick later.
It just flowed off so easily.
Don't worry. Nick can use it. Or maybe Jen Williams tomorrow can use it out of context. Anyway, the point is that if you have that, what is to stop, if the Supreme Court does that, it's going to codify people deciding based on their religion. He's also going to get the Johnson Amendment, by the way, which is going to allow churches to become political organizations.
Yeah, we've had a discussion before. I'm not sure.
It's in the tax reform bill, and we had Peter Roskam on today, and they're not taking it out.
Well, I guess they're going to get it.
They're getting it.
Yeah.
So the boy, they're going to get that. So we're going to erase the last 100 years of progress along those kinds of issues.
Sure, we're also going to take positions. To me, I've never understood with the people that call themselves conservative on the very far right that want to put the Bible or their religious beliefs ahead of the Constitution. That's where we're heading, and that's what Roy Moore's doing. That's not a good development. The Constitution comes first. And the Constitution protects religious freedoms, but it shouldn't be the other way around. And that's where we're going. But you're going to, in the long run, I think, as a party, and I don't think this necessarily applies as much here in Illinois, but I think nationally, you're going to lose a lot of people.
Yeah.
You're just write off the millennials on the gay rights stuff. Just forget them. We're at 29% right now as a brand. The Republican, if you do it. Yeah, that support
by millennial.
By everybody, but millennials, it's less than that. Mm-hmm. So we're
and
not
it's mostly because the social issues is what
it's only social issues. The way to win is you are a fiscal conservative, you're a national security hawk, but you're a social moderate. I'm not saying even a far left moderate, but at least some tolerance, not the talk we
are. Well, that's
what
I am, and how the hell did I end up here with this? And I got Bernie Sanders who wants to nationalize everything, right? And that's a non-starter. Democrats aren't even in play here. Republicans, regular Republicans, Republicans as you just described them, people as I see myself as, how do we stop this slide that is going to take this country into a place that is really going to be disastrous in the long run?
Well, I think they've been smart, the leadership and the Congress, to just ignore it and try to get done what you can get done. And I think that's why we got this tax bill done. So give Peter Roskam a ton of credit and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and the rest. But it is a bad direction. We get this win. I'm waiting to see after the filings for the upcoming primaries in the states to see if anybody on the Republican side actually starts to stand up. And the storm clouds on the horizon, I mention this every time I'm on, this Mueller investigation is on a very fast track. And they just throw these subpoenas at Deutsche Bank.
He's going to win a couple. Well, now they're denying, that Deutsche Bank is denying that they've been subpoenaed.
Well, Deutsche Bank, I think, under law, can't say they've been subpoenaed. They're bank subpoenas.
Very interesting. Well, he's going to fire Mueller. And he's going to be able to fire Mueller because he's going to say that all of these other people around, it was a political witch hunt in the beginning. Look at all these text messages in this, and this guy's having an affair. He wants to criminalize having an affair, which is a great irony. And so it's like there is a whole other – he's going to be able to do this and get away with it. He's going to get away. And the Republicans are going to just stick their head in the sand because they're afraid of a primary challenge. And until next June, they're going to give him anything he wants.
But I'm not sure – it's clear legally he can fire Mueller. He didn't hire him.
He'll ask Rosenstein to do it. And when Rosenstein doesn't do it, Rosenstein's fired. Rosenstein's probably going to get fired before Mueller anyway.
Yeah,
Watch it. Watch it, Pat Brady. You're the one who said there was no chance he's going to win. I told you he's going to win. And now he's winning. Oh, my God.
All right. Luckily, you never rubbed that in his face.
Sorry.
You know, usually it only takes you 4 or 5 minutes to get that out.
Peel it up.
It's usually in the intro.
Take it away. Do you remember there you go. That's the Ides of March and the meaning of Christmas. That's going to be their new Christmas CD, by the way, which you're going to be able to get. I'll tell you exactly how in just a couple of seconds here. That's Jim Peterick right there. That's him singing.
Love
that's him writing. That's him thinking great thoughts to make sure that happens.
You know, I love Christmas. Don't you?
I do. You do?
Love Christmas.
You think so?
I know.
I don't know. You don't
surprised.
Always come off like you love Christmas.
Oh no, I'm a romantic about it. It's like I'm like bah humbug all the way up to it, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, Christmas.
Yeah, I just watch Love Actually, and then it puts me in the mood for the entire
holiday.
That'll
do it. Like, that is one of my favorite shows.
What matters?
I mean, for real.
But the music, the song you just played meets the Rokon rule of Christmas songs. That it, on its own, it would stand as a beautiful song, and
yes.
So it's
Thank
a great
you.
Christmas song.
I Thank do you. Not like Christmas songs that are just hokey for the purpose of
Yuck.
Christmas.
Yuck.
Right? Like,
yeah, no, totally.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
Oh God!
Blow it up.
Oh God!
Anything that a chipmunk sings, blow it up. I want a song that would be a song that if it weren't about Christmas, would still be a song you'd want to listen to.
Right on. I'm totally with you. I mean, we were very on this song. We were very influenced by the Beach Boys, and you know, Larry and I write with Brian and of course
Brian Wilson from the
Joe
Beach
Thomas.
Boys.
Yep. Yes. And we just got in that Beach Boy mood, so I think maybe you can hear some of that
yes.
Beach
Ew.
Boy fun.
Love it.
In that, I love that song.
No question.
And the whole idea of it, Ro and Anna, is that all the shtick about Christmas really obliterates the real meaning of it and how it started. You know, it's kind of a corny idea, but it's real. I mean, if that little kid didn't get born in that manger, you know, that thing.
Right.
That wouldn't be nothing, right?
Right, exactly.
So that's what the song's about.
We'd be fasting over Ramadan right about now. I think it's about how that would be
would
going.
Would that happen?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Either that or it would be Hanukkah. One or the other. I'm not quite sure
really
which.
You're really just making this all
I'm
up.
Just saying that's the possibility. That's all I'm saying. So here's the thing.
Let's
you,
get on.
We don't have a Ramadan
really
song here, do you?
Trouble.
Anyway, the point is here. The Ides of March are going to be featuring Jim Peterick at the Arcata Theater on December 16th at 8 o'clock.
Correct.
Tickets are $39, and that is a deal right there.
Yes, it is.
At the Classic Arcata Theater in St. Charles.
Yeah, can I say you can get them at oshows.com, the amazing Ron Onesti, the rock palace of the Midwest.
Yeah.
Oshows.com.
The letter O and then the word shows.com.
Yep, I just heard from Ron, and that's how you get the ticks.
Okay, oshows.com.
Still, it's selling really well, but there's still some tickets left. And that sounds like a line, but there really is some tickets left.
Just a few tickets left.
Yeah, that's such a cliche.
Oshows.com.
Who are you trying to be?
He's cheesy radio guy.
Cheesy radio guy. So, you know, it's music radio guy from the 70s.
Why do music radio guys have those S's?
I don't know, because S right here, you mean?
What is that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Jim, but ask him what his favorite time of the day is.
What's your favorite time of the day?
4:20 and 7:20 in the morning.
You what's get a lot coming of S's. Up?
This afternoon at 4:20. Tomorrow morning at 7:20.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I always wondered growing up listening to those voices if they actually sounded like that in person. And some of them do.
Some of them do. Well, you know what happens is there's a style of talk show guy.
Right. Who talks like this, man. Kind of this. The whole time.
Mm-hmm. Right? And they tend to be crazy. And they tend to be a little over the top. Like you get that the guy that's the national, the InfoWars guy, whatever that dude's name
Alex
is.
Alex Jones.
Alex Jones, right. Thank you. And you know, Mancow's got a little bit. But the thing with Mancow is Mancow actually does talk like that. Mm-hmm. Like when you talk to Mancow.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, man. He's like that. You're like, yeah. No, I'm like, okay, you don't have to talk like that. And Mancow goes, this is how I talk.
That's
him.
That's it.
Yeah. He's become that.
Right, but there are guys like from music radio in the 70s into the 80s who, and they always had like a special effect thing going on their voice, and they would do the reverb and all of that, and then you would talk to them off the end like,
So anyway, so we're gonna have dinner.
It's not you. It's not how you sound.
I know.
That's weird.
You always picture the way someone looks, and when they don't look like that, it's like what?
Right, those guys who all sound like
4:20 and 7:20.
Are either 400 pounds or they're 3 feet tall. And it's sort of like, how do they sound like that?
Sometimes the toothpicks will surprise you. They open their mouth and it's very deep voice.
Yeah.
You know?
They got that big throat.
Yeah, the big set of pipes.
Deep throat.
Oh, I love that movie. I'm giving away copies of it at 7:20.
All right, let's talk about the Christmas show. What's going to happen at the Christmas show?
Okay, well, it's, first of all, a national treasure, certainly a Midwest treasure. Megan McDonough is opening for us. She's an amazing singer-songwriter out of St. Charles, and she's been part of our show for a number of years now. She just puts you in the spirit, her wonderful voice, and she's had hit records, and she is a friend of Dolly Parton's, and just a great, great gal. And then the ads come on, and the whole first set is nothing but Christmas content, mostly originals, which is a little different because I love writing Christmas songs, and Scott May and I are successful in writing songs together, like one that I'll probably play later called Sharing Christmas.
Okay.
So the whole first set is Christmas, and it ends with We Wish, which is our wish for a better, world soon.
As quickly as you can,
possible, God.
God.
Yeah, you know, and it ends with Sharing Christmas, which is going to have a special homage to Dick Biondi, who did this wonderful introduction that we recorded a few years back. So we're going to say Dick is here in spirit, and his photo will be on the screen, and then he'll introduce it, and then we'll do.
We should mention though, people have been asking me about Dick a lot recently, right? Because he's one of those guys that we all grew up with. Our parents, in many cases, grew up with Dick Biondi on the radio. And, you know, and he's not consistently on the radio. Mm-hmm. And so people have been asking, you know, how is he still with us? He is still with us.
Yes.
He's still alive.
Oh, yes.
And he is, he's advanced in age at this point, so he works intermittently, but he still works. And it is the most, it is at times, and I, you know, how lucky are we that those of us who've gotten to know him over the years, I would stop, you know, in the hallways at WLS, and I would see him, and I would stop, and I would think to myself, oh, my God, that's Dick Biondi, and I'm standing in the hallway with him.
Yeah, about that?
He's that guy.
Yeah. He's an icon, and he's the only guy that's more famous than the Ides of March when we're walking through Sox Park. People just ignore us. Dick! Dick! What about
you? You're sure that's not for you?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No.
All right, got
no.
it.
Oh.
I don't get it.
What happened?
Yep, come on. That
anyway,
wasn't right.
He set me up. He does that all
I
the time.
Mean to. It's too easy. So anyways, Scott Miller, our good friend, just was at his birthday party, 85, and he was in great spirits, and he has a little trouble moving, but he's with us and
and
rocking.
He is absolutely great. And there were, you know, from that era, you know, the guy that I'm making fun of is a guy who wishes he was Dick Biondi. Dick Biondi had this amazing ability to talk fast, be understandable, and still have such personality in whatever he was doing. And he's so passionate about the music.
Yes, he is, and that clear voice—it's still there.
Yeah,
you know,
never it's amazing lost, stuff.
Never got. So that'll be really a lump in the throat moment at the end of the first set. Oh. Second set, we come back Full Metal Jacket with the brass, doing all the songs that I've been so fortunate to write or co-write through my career, different bands. And
so a lot of music, the Ides of March music and the Survivor music and all the rest of that.
Yeah, okay. And Sammy Hagar and 38 Special and with the big kahuna, Eye of the Tiger.
Course.
Oh, I've never heard that song.
Who would
Which
have
one
thought
is
it?
That? Yeah. Which one is that song? All right, so no, wait a second. Now, so then you do that, and then you end up on a. Do you end on a? I hate to do the set list here, but do you end up on a Christmas song?
Well, no.
Oh, you don't? No. Oh, that's interesting. It's Christmassy. Well, I think this is interesting because it's Christmassy, and then you get it's all rock and rolling, and then the people are pretty. You know, my suggestion, by the way, at the Arcata, it's very important to try to buy two drinks at the bar when you go to sit down.
Why?
Because the Arcata bar is a shorty bar.
It's a shorty bar.
Yeah. So you got to kind of, and there's a little restaurant next door, a little preload next door. And
preload.
Then you're kind of ready to go.
Some protein.
There's a whole, and it's a great, when you're in the Arcata, you can't believe it is a palace. It is
beautiful theater.
It is beautiful, and it is it's an amazing space.
And it sounds great. They have a brand new sound system. It sounds like $1 million. I got the solution.
Yeah.
Ready? Mm-hmm. Eye of the Reindeer.
Perfect.
Would it work?
Do you want to do any Christmas covers, or it's all yours?
No, we do a few. We do Little Drummer Boy with Mike Borch featured on the drums, and it's beautiful. And we feature all the musicians. Dave Stahl, not Dave Stahlberg. He is not with the band anymore. Sadly, he was a great, great trombone player. But anyway, the brass do a chorale on a great Christmas song. Do You Hear What I Hear? It's just an incredible show.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
That's a great one. All right. Okay. So we're good to go. Stand by.
Because
we're going to play some songs.
I'm here forever.
Will you do that?
Forever.
Will you play?
I don't
want to
go out there. It's cold.
There you go.
Baby, it's cold outside. Do you do
Baby,
that one?
Baby, it's cold outside.
I love it.
Jim Peterick is here, and he's going to be singing "The Meaning of Christmas." That you heard a little bit of that in the CD version. Which, if you go to the show on the 16th, you're going to be able to get the CD version.
And we'll autograph them.
Oh dear.
Oh dear.
Oh, that's big. And then, if you wish. You can also, if you want to go to the show, go to oshows.com. That's the website for the Arcata Theater. Shows.com, and get yourself set up here because it's going to be a ton of fun. And then this is a nice CD to open the Christmas presents to, or if you got your Christmas party going, it's very festive.
Yeah,
it's very festive. I like what you did here, Jim.
Thank you. What?
I didn't say that.
Oh.
More Jim Peterick coming up right after this. But first, Violetta Potter Minute with WGN Traffic Travel Spots at 6:25.
All right. Did you want to tell us something, Anna?
I do. Play ball. Celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia. Exclusive books. So much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com. Check it out today.
Judy Pollack's got the news. And then Jim Peterick is going to play some Christmas music for us. And he might work his way into, a hit or two along the way. Who knows? I know. Stand by, Jim. Don't move. Don't do anything. Because Judy Pollack's got the WGN News, brought to you by Waltz Food Centers.
Hey, are you ready?
Hey, well, hold on one second.
Boy, that was smooth.
Don't anybody move. Hold on. Let me do this.
This is going great, guys.
Let me do this right.
Just like we rehearsed it.
Let me do it. Let me do it. The proper amount of echo on us, too. Because this is a very special moment.
It
here
is.
In the WGN studios.
Very.
We've got Dick Biondi with us. In spirit.
In spirit.
In spirit.
Sure.
And
he's okay.
He's alive.
Otherwise, you're going to get more questions.
I have to keep saying that, yeah. But he's because he's a radio legend, and
yes.
and this song that Jim Peterik is about to do, which you can also see him do live at the Ides of March Christmas show featuring Jim Peterik at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles on December 16th. oshows.com if you want your tickets.
It's one of Dick's favorite songs. Me and Scott May wrote this. Don't let the silent night pass you by. Fill your heart with the season. Reach out your branches up to the sky. Where there is love, there's a reason. Sing for the children, the innocent few. Let the day spirit travel in you. Sharing Christmas, it's more than just ribbons and balls. It's a feeling that grows. Sharing Christmas, open your hearts on this day. Let in your love light the way. Gather in song, all you angels on earth, united as one voice together. Wait for the day when in light of his birth, we'll sit at one table in heaven. Let faith be your compass when the highways are dark. Measure your fortune with the love in your heart. Sharing Christmas, it's more than just ribbons and bows. It's a feeling that grows. Sharing Christmas, open your hearts on this day. Letting your love light the way. Letting your love light the way. Letting his love light the way.
There he is, Jim Peterik.
So good.
Now, and again, we need to do this with as much of the reverb as possible.
Did you really lay the reverb on there?
I'm laying the reverb like there's no tomorrow, like I'm a Hollywood executive. Let me just say this, that there are very few shows that mm-hmm. are worth saying. I got to actually get rid of it now because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
There are very few shows that are worth going to see, at Christmas that you're going to walk away from and have that spirit in him. I'm going to tell you right now, mm-hmm. and I've seen this show, this Jim Peterik. Anytime you get to see Jim Peterik in the Ides of March, it's very lucky because he does play. He lives in Chicago, so he plays the Chicago area.
We get to see him a lot.
Quite a bit. It is, I'm always blown away.
Thank you.
Because there are so many things. And then you do, and you stop, and you go, wait, you wrote that? Wait, what? What?
Is that
what
you possible?
Did? Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, it was an incredible stroke of luck, just meeting up with the people I met. It all started with one phone call. Uh-huh. You ever think about really where your career started? Mm-hmm. One phone call.
Moments that changed the trajectory of everything.
Yeah, and it wasn't the Stallone story. That was good.
It's a great story.
But the phone call from
Sylvester Stallone to do Eye of the Tiger.
Write the theme song.
I'm working on a song right now. Maybe you could help me out.
Something like that.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. That's better than mine, and mine's pretty bad. So the call was from Larry Millis' mother. To Mercury Records and got us our first audition with our little 45 that we pressed up ourselves. And that song is called Like It or Lump It. Mm-hmm. It was on our own Epitome label, which everybody called Epitome. Of course. And both of our names, the writers' names were all misspelled. They have a guy that misspells all the names.
Yes.
It seems. But anyway, that phone call, everything's spider web from there. I can trace everything to that phone call.
That's crazy.
We're very blessed.
That is a blessing.
What year was that phone call?
That phone call was 64.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And you were kids. I mean, you were teenagers. Young teenagers in some cases. You were 13.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I know, because he's not 110. I mean, that's the thing. It's
no.
Like, you know, the guys were making
so
it in 64 were already like 30 years old, right? Well, no, you were 13.
Well, right. And you wouldn't listen, which is we're doing at the show with the original choreography. But anyway, it's really, really
you
bad.
You wouldn't listen. I thought he was talking to me. No, you wouldn't listen. No,
you wouldn't listen. No, it's a song.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But did you know then, Jim, that was a very powerful moment? Or were you so young? You're a baby. How do you know?
We were blown away. I said, Mrs. Mills, how did you get the... Well, I looked in the phone book, Mercury Records. Boom, I made a call. That easy. To us kids in Chicago, you know, the Billboard Hot 100 was a thing of some other guys, you know?
Yeah, right.
And we were just blown away.
But you were part of a movement of musical acts out of Chicago at that moment. There were black acts coming out of Chicago at that point, but there were not a ton of rock and roll, you know, like the white act, rock and roll, teeny bopper kind of acts coming out of Chicago yet. And there were some folk acts coming out, but there wasn't like this. There wasn't that moment in which you and then you know, radio back then was segregated.
Yes,
you know, black artists could not get on. What were considered to be white radio stations at that point, and until about 19, till basically Diana Ross was the one that broke that
mold. Was she black?
Turns out,
oh, wow.
In the and you know the whole and basically Motown started to make its move into into mainstream radio,
which was
you know the beginning but in the South it still didn't happen, which was a crazy thing.
Oh yeah. I remember there was an integrated group. I think they were like the Argyles or one of these groups, and the rumor was, don't look at them, don't listen to them, they're biracially mixed. I go, so what? Right. I was 6 years old going, so
what? A
right?
Time.
It was. So I know. Ridiculous. Can you believe? I mean, that's the way people thought, and apparently still do. But. They didn't say it until just recently again that they actually still felt that way.
I was blown away. But we were part of that, the Cornerstones of Rock, the shows that we're touring with now. Buckingham's Ides of March, New County, Six Crying Shames, Shadows of Night, Elio Haynes, Jeremiah. We should
mention that,
Skip
too.
Haynes.
Skip Haynes just passing away, which was, you know, part of that. And, you know, there were songs about Chicago. There were songs that, you know, there was a definite style that was coming out of here at the time.
And that song is amazing.
Oh, Lakeshore Drive?
It lights people up.
It does. Still to this very day.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it does get featured and it's, you know, you can tell. Yeah. You can tell there's certain songs from an era that when they still get featured in commercials or movies or whatever it is. TV shows. And there's I don't think there's one that is featured in more than yours, Vehicle.
Oh my God. It's
Helmut, do you know total? I mean,
everywhere.
Your accountant knows how many, but do you know how many different commercials and
oh my God.
Things you've signed
never
off the rights
it
to?
It up, you know, not to mention rappers who have, well, L.O. Black had is having a giant hit right now with A King Is Born. He legally licensed the Vehicle riff from the original recording.
Yeah.
And it's blowing up.
I just can't imagine how many guys have stolen it either. I
mean,
I heard something. It was funny. I heard something within the last couple of months on the air in something that is a takeoff of the riff, of the Vehicle riff, horn takeoff. Yeah.
Sure. And it was that close?
It's close enough that you go, oh, hey, wait a second.
Yeah.
I got it. Tell me that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Off air.
Yeah, off air.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's one that where they're trying to get you to go, oh, no.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of
people do try that. I mean, that's the one problem with that, with music, is that it's kind of easy to steal.
You know, where there's a hit, there's a writ, you know. You know,
in radio, we call that DJ court.
Okay,
it's like, you know, whenever a guy says something about another guy in our business, we go to DJ court.
Well,
we've all been in, everybody, if you haven't made it until you've been in DJ, until you've been sitting in court and being questioned, you know, with the judge and being questioned by the lawyers about, you know, what did this guy say to this guy at this time?
You're being sued or you're suing.
Yeah.
But it's part of being successful.
Sure.
Sure. All right. You know, we're going to do a quick time out here with Violetta with the WGN Turkey Trouble Spots, and then we'll come back. And you want to do, let's do the Christmas hit off of this.
The humble version?
Yes, the humble version of The Meaning of Christmas. Can
Sounds
we do that
good.
On the other side? All right. Jim Peterick is with us. Ides of March. Don't forget, oshows.com. They're going to be in St. Charles at the Arcata Theater on December 16th, 8 o'clock show. Do not miss us. It's going to be a ton of fun. But first, Violetta's got the WGN Driver Triple Spots. All right, Jim Peterick is with us, and he's got a couple things I just want to mention here. We've been telling you about the show, which is at the Arcata on December 16th, 8 o'clock, oshows.com. By the way, if you want to go see the Ides of March Christmas show. I don't know. I was going to say the Ides March
Jim.
Somewhere. I don't know. Right. What's
he's
the name of your band
him.
Again?
Any,
right, Ides March. You should do the Ides of March of Dimes.
That happened. That didn't happen, but we were on the Moody Blues Cruise last year, and which we're doing again in January. And I'm waiting for a tram, and this older lady, well, my age,
yeah.
Her husband goes, "Oh, look. That's that guy from the March of Dimes."
Oh.
I go, yep.
That's
yeah, that's right. That's, I do think we should get together with March of Dimes and do the Ides of March of Dimes.
Yeah.
And do like a concert
well,
for them.
Well, let's do it.
I think that's a very good idea.
We're talking about that.
Yes, I know. Now we do it. It's a better idea than it, than it is an actual thing.
You heard
all right,
me.
Here we go.
Okay.
So that's going to be in St. Charles on December 16th. Also, you're going to be able to buy the new CD there, the Christmas CD, which is a great idea. And one of the coolest items of all times, if you watch Wendy C. Live, you know about this. Mm-hmm. There is a Jim has put together a calendar with all of his guitars because he's one of the most voracious rock and roll guitar collectors. Right. And this is all stuff for him that he that he still and you use
I
almost
do.
All of it.
These are all your guitars. I didn't even realize
my
it.
Personal
they're
guitars.
Gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
I mean, my
gosh.
Wife. Hi, Karen. Is a saint.
She is.
Yes. I have guitars everywhere.
You just put them all over the house. You don't have a guitar rooms.
I have
all over
the major room, but then I have minor rooms all over the house. The bathroom, the bedroom, the studio.
Honey, where's that guitar I left in the bathroom? What is it?
It's my Stratocaster. Or you've got like how many of those?
I've got 10 Strats.
And how many total?
192,
and they're in this calendar,
yes,
and you'll
they
also
are.
Get those at
yes,
the show
they are.
Too, merchandise. Or go to the I don't know, Facebook official Jim Peterick or Twitter, one of those.
Yeah, jimpeterick.com. Amazon is selling it. Barbara's Books. Oh, can I plug Barbara's? Oh, just one real quick.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, real fast.
The 9th. I'm going to be at the Glenview store at noon.
Okay.
Great store.
Okay, we got everything done. We got to get done here. Now, can you do a Christmas song for us?
Yes.
For God's sake.
This is that one, that new one that I've never sung before, The Meaning of Christmas. Good luck, Jim.
Thank you.
It's finally Christmas Eve, with carols on the breeze. Young eyes can't wait to see the gifts up Santa's sleeve. And now the video games replace our model trains. And though the times have changed, kids are kids, the thrill's the same. Oh, but it's so easy to miss the reason for celebrating this wonderful season. Ba-ba-da. Do you remember the meaning of Christmas? Through the commotion, it's easy to miss us. Are we forgetting the magic of Christmas Day? Oh, you know the party's only part of the story. In celebration, we honor His glory. Let us remember the meaning of Christmas Day. Now we could hardly sleep. Out from my beds we'd sneak, just listening in awe for the sound of reindeer paws. Oh, let's remember the kindness of strangers who come to welcome the babe in the manger. Do you remember the meaning of Christmas? Through the commotion, it's easy to miss us. Do you remember the magic of Christmas Day? Oh, you know the party's only part of the story. In celebration we honor His glory. Let us remember the meaning of Christmas. Let us remember the meaning of Christmas. Let us remember the meaning of Christmas Day. Of Christmas Day. Of Christmas Day.